Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we continue to work our way down the list of seven candidates who want to replace Mike Fagan on the Spokane City Council in the Northeast District. Last week, we talked with four of the candidates. Now we turn to Michael Cathcart. Cathcart has worked for the Spokane Home Builders Association. He's also a political consultant for local candidates.
You know, I've been around city politics and city issues for quite a while. You know, it's really where my passion lies. I'm really interested in, you know, pursuing some changes here in the city, especially on the economic front, but on a lot of community issues as well. And I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of those issues as this conversation continues.
So I'm curious as to why take the move from the guy who's sort of behind the campaigns to the guy who's the focal point of the campaign?
Well, you know, I live in the Northeast District, and I looked at the candidates running, and I looked at the issues that we're facing, and I just realized that there really wasn't anybody running who, well, you know, represented me very well. And I feel like there's a big constituency of people that probably agree similarly to me on some of these key issues. And so I just decided, you know, it's time to step up, you know, put up or shut up. And so I'm putting myself out there to see if I can help make some of the change that I've been advocating for so long.
So are you learning new things now that you've got a different role in a campaign?
I'm certainly experiencing things from the other side. You know, it's giving me new perspectives on what it takes to actually run a campaign as a candidate. I've certainly done it as a campaign manager and in other various roles. But yeah, this is a whole new experience. But the other part of it that I'm really enjoying, quite frankly, is the doorbelling aspect of this, going out and talking to the constituents one-on-one. And I have been spending just an enormous amount of time doing that. And I think that that's one, that's how you win. And I think that two, that that's how you get to know the issues and what people are really concerned about. And I'll tell you, it has just been a rewarding, but very heartbreaking experience talking to some of these folks. You hear these stories and you're just like, I mean, if you can't directly relate with something, I mean, you just, your heart breaks for them. And, you know, there was a woman I spoke with over in the Bemis area just a couple of days ago. And she shared with me just in tears the entire time that a neighbor on one side of her was broken into twice, neighbor on the other side of her broken into once, and her car had been prowled three different times. And she can't sleep. She's scared to death that her house is next. And she's just frightened. You know, law enforcement doesn't have the resources to come out and actually do any sort of investigation and pursue justice in those cases. And so she's just kind of stuck, but she's just deathly afraid that she's going to be next. So you hear these stories and your heart breaks for these constituents. And so you just want to do everything you can to, you know, improve the situation and the lives of all these folks. One other quick anecdote.
Sure. Yeah.
I am pretty sure that my district one is single-handedly keeping the Ring doorbell in supply, because they are everywhere. I think folks have realized that, you know, the resources aren't there to protect them. And so they're going to have to spend their own resources to protect themselves. And it's a good thing for them to do. I'm glad they're doing it. You know, folks need to be smart like that, but it's just sad that that's what it's kind of come to.
So as we start down the list of issues, which are the most important? Which are the highest on your list, your agenda?
Well, as I just pointed out, I mean, I think it's the crime issue is number one, and that really does, you know, abut with the homeless issue. I mean, there are differences and there are, you know, areas where you separate those out, but together that is one major issue that everybody's concerned about. Next to that, I mean, roads are obviously a big one. Everybody talks about roads. We've got to do a better job with taking care of big issues when they occur, you know, the potholes, things like that. It seems to me that the city's doing a good job with the maintenance schedule in terms of the major arterials and some of those, you know, major projects, but it's the small little things that they haven't been doing quite as well. They'll come out, they'll fill, you know, a pothole, but they'll leave four or five others that are in plain view of the one they just filled, and just things like that where they could be a lot smarter. And then the other big issues for me that I'm really focusing on in this campaign are housing, and we'll get to that, I'm sure. In addition to economic opportunity, I'm really interested in seeing how we can improve upward mobility amongst folks, especially in my district. There's a lot of really good conversation around this new Northeast PDA that could be going in, but there's also the threat that it might be stalled right now in the city, and so I'm really concerned about that. And then the big fourth big issue that I'm also talking about is transparency. I think a lot of folks are kind of overlooking transparency, but as somebody who's dealt with the city quite a bit in various capacities, I've discovered how difficult it can be to get information from the city, timely information from the city. And I just think anybody who's pursuing that, whether it's a constituent, the media, or somebody else, should have easy, timely access to the information that they need about what's going on within our city.
So you mentioned timely. Are you thinking about when you file a public records request, for example, it takes 6 months or a year in order to get the information?
I'm still waiting on a couple of public records requests from last year. So yeah, I mean, that's one, but, and that's a piece of it, but you know, so if your city council is going to bring up an ordinance or an issue and they're going to be discussing that or voting on something, you know, the public should be able to get all the documentation surrounding that that perhaps the council has worked on sort of behind the scenes, right? Now, sometimes that gets posted on the city clerk's site, sometimes the council site, but sometimes it's nowhere to be found and you have to do these public records requests. And a lot of times you don't know that this ordinance is even coming until 3-4 weeks out or sooner. And the by the time you get your records request fulfilled, they've already voted on it and moved on to the next issue. And so we need to do a better job there. I would also change some of the rules around attorney-client privilege with regard to what the city council releases from their attorney. They've used that a couple of times to sort of protect themselves from releasing information on a few different issues. I would change that. But then the other thing I think we should do that's just a very easy thing for the public is we should be recording and putting out on the website all of the committee meetings of the city council, all of the study sessions, all of those where there's a majority of the council present talking about things. There's no reason why those can't be recorded and broadcast out for the public to see and understand what's going on.
So. Does that mean you're willing to spend the extra money in order to be able to do that?
And I don't think it'd be that difficult. We're talking, you know, one or two extra cameras, and, you know, maybe a little bit more staff time. But I think it's a reasonable thing to do in order to make sure the public is well informed with what the city's doing and discussing.
I could probably learn something from the TVW folks in Olympia who do all the committee hearings.
They do a great job.
They do a great job. Yes, exactly. They agreed with that. So let's go back and talk with crime for a minute. The people of the city of Spokane voted to put a little extra property tax toward crime and toward public safety, police and fire. Did you agree with that? Was that a...
No, I was very concerned about it because I didn't think there was enough money in there for the law enforcement side. And I really felt like that was more geared towards fire. And they sort of sprinkled in a little extra to try and get people to vote for it for the law enforcement side of it. And so I was very concerned and it passed and I hope we're spending that money wisely. But from what I've seen and heard, there is not, in fact, enough money to fulfill the promises they made regarding law enforcement. So we may have to backfill somewhere out of the city budget or and I'm a big proponent of, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but I'm a big proponent of, you know, let's look at the budget. Let's reprioritize some resources to make sure that we have more money going to law enforcement. You know, I've got some ideas that would, I think, improve both the crime rate as well as just give people a stronger sense of security. And I think we need to move back towards a more neighborhood model of policing. In fact, I would even go so far as to put officers on the ground, you know, walking some of these neighborhoods, not just walking downtown, but walking some of the neighborhoods. And I think if they can get to know the homeowners, the renters, the business owners, they'll have a much better sense of what's going on in those neighborhoods and those smaller, you know, kind of regions of our city. And they'll know if there's a car that's out of place, if there's something that doesn't seem quite right, because they'll know the folks and be familiar with the area much better. And so it would require adding more officers, obviously, to be able to do this. But I think long term, that should be our goal.
So you talk about priorities then. If you're going to add to the police, what are you going to take away from that the city's already spending money on?
Well, the first thing I think we do is we stop adding more things to spend money on. That's an easy one. You know, there's one of the mayoral candidates who's our current council president has proposed, you know, two entirely new departments that he would implement. I would not support either of those. I don't think that that's money well spent. I would scale back probably on a few other areas, but I, you know, it really is going to require getting into that budget at the line item level, which is actually, and people may not know this, but the line item level is not actually the council's prerogative. That's more the administration's prerogative. And so I think as a council, we would just need to be a little bit more forceful in terms of saying, hey, these are the changes that we're going to need if we're going to pass this budget. And so we'll just have to get in there in depth and look at that. But, you know, law enforcement, you know, as far as services go, should be, you know, our top priority, especially right now in light of kind of what's going on.
So let's go now to homelessness, which is one of those we've talked about, which I think is probably the top visible issue in this campaign. How has the city done in terms of dealing with homeless folks right now?
Not very well. I don't think it was smart to suspend sit lie the way they did. I think we need to do a better job enforcing sit lie, enforcing the no camping rules. Again, you know, as I'm doorbelling and talking to constituents, they're pointing out to me, you know, where there are tent cities currently or where there were, and they took a very long time to be cleaned up. That shouldn't be the case. And you wonder, you know, I've seen reports recently that now they're saying it's a 3-day, 72 hours to basically go through, clean it up, and move everybody out of there. Well, that doesn't seem to be the case in my district. And I don't know if that's because my district is just often overlooked and maybe not quite seen in the same light as the other two by some folks. But I think we need to do a much better, quicker job of that. We shouldn't be, and thankfully the mayor vetoed the ordinance, but we shouldn't be turning City Hall into a warming shelter. I think that was a mistake, both just logistically as well as perception. I just don't think that was a smart thing to do. And then finally, I don't think that we are, again, this goes back to the resources for law enforcement. We're not giving them the tools and the resources they need to enforce the laws that are on the books. If we have folks that are out on the streets, and we have to separate out the homeless from the vagrants, right? There is a difference. And we should be doing everything we can to help those who want help and who are seeking help and who are kind of right there, ripe for assistance. But the ones who don't want help, the ones who refuse help, you know, I think we need to have a zero tolerance policy. If you're seen outside, whether it's in a neighborhood, a business center, downtown, it doesn't matter, and you're shooting up, you're harassing people, you're causing, you know, an issue in the surrounding area, or you're just trashing the street and the sidewalk, we should have a zero tolerance policy. And if folks have, you know, a long record, a criminal history, you know, then obviously, you know, we need to be making sure that those folks are going away longer periods of time, which means we've got to revisit the issue of the jail and talk about, you know, what is going to be an acceptable amount that we're willing to spend to improve, fix, replace the jail. That's a really big issue, obviously, right now. And so there's a number of things, but overall, the city, I don't believe, has done a great job with trying to fix the problem. Instead, I think that there's been too much enabling. They have done a good job when it comes to veterans. It seems like they've done a really good job getting those folks help and off the streets. But outside of that, it just has kind of fallen short, I think, of where we would expect.
We're talking with Spokane City Council candidate Michael Cathcart. There's talk in the city about buying a building for a 24/7 shelter. Is that something that you would support?
I don't think the city should be the ones that are owning and operating these shelters.
So the city should work with private entities to
private
do that.
Nonprofit. Okay. Absolutely. Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, we need to look at some of what other communities are doing successfully. I wouldn't normally point to a place like New York City, but they've actually done a really good job with the homeless issue. Now, granted, they've spent more money in different areas and done some different things, but policy wise, they've created an incentive based system that I think makes a lot of sense. And I don't think we could perfectly replicate it, but we could probably do something very similar here, where the money they're giving to nonprofits is based on outcomes. And so they're saying, hey, show us that you're actually making a difference by getting folks off the streets, getting them, support, training, education to improve, you know, job opportunities, you know, show us that these positive outcomes are occurring. So I think we can do that. But I think we can also apply that to some degree to, some of the folks who are homeless themselves and say, hey, we're willing to help you. We will support you any way we can, but you got to prove to us that you are actually trying to take steps that are improving your life or your family's life and making things better for yourself. And I think if we kind of put a system in place like that, you know, we can be a very compassionate city, but we can also be one that is actually making a difference on this issue.
Is Spokane suffering from compassion fatigue, do you think?
You mean people just getting tired of dealing with the issue in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you see that even on the west side in the Seattle area. In fact, I saw some polling data the Seattle Times put out maybe 2 months ago that showed a majority of Seattle voters are to the point where they're willing to basically accept policies that go against their political beliefs if it just means fixing the issue, right? And that's a big change for especially a city like Seattle. And I think we're kind of following in that direction as well. Folks are just tired of the issue and they want it resolved.
So you talked about fixing the issue. What is fixing the issue in this case?
Well, it's making sure that the folks are not on the streets, that they are getting help, that they are getting into job training, that they are getting into housing, or if they are addicted and or have mental health issues, that they're getting into treatment. You know, I don't necessarily agree with the housing first model. I think it can be housing along with treatment at the same time, coinciding. But the problem is, and I've talked to so many people who have been down. In fact, just the other day, I met a couple doorbelling whose son is homeless himself. And they went down to the Catholic Charities development down there. to look for him. And when they got down there, they were stunned at what they saw. They said it was just not a very good situation for anybody. And in fact, they said there were people that you could visibly see doing drugs pretty much everywhere. And so when we just sort of throw these people into housing, yeah, they're off the streets. But it's not fixing the situation. They're not getting the help. They're not improving their lives. They're not getting off the drugs or the substance abuse that they're, that they've been on. And so, I think we have to have some sort of a coinciding, treatment with housing, or treatment first and then housing.
So, but what if the problem is so big that the private sector can't do it and the city needs to sort of step up? Are you willing to devote more city resources to doing that?
Well, I think we can devote city resources towards things like treatment and mental health care. I don't have a problem with that if we're actually addressing the situation at hand, you know, because when we help somebody get off the street, that doesn't just help them. It helps our entire society, right? Because now it's less money that we have to spend to take care of them, but it's also, it just means that we have a safer community. We have cleaner streets. We have a better situation overall. We're a more desirable and attractive place for employers who might want to come here too. And that's a big issue for me, a very big one. So I would absolutely, on the mental health and the treatment stuff, I think we can. And in fact, I think that has to be a part of the jail discussion that we're having. So there needs to be some component that is going to include mental health services and addiction treatment as part of a new jail. And I think that we need to be going to the state as well, because that is really a role for the state to be playing and say, hey, this is our situation. We need to make sure that you are also providing us with some of the funding to make sure that this is happening. And I think as council members or the administration, you know, lobbying for those sorts of resources is one part of the job.
So there are city officials who are and county officials who are now talking about the jail and how much more should we do to divert folks out of the jail. And others are saying, you know, a lot of those folks you're trying to divert really belong there because they're multiple offenders and that sort of thing. How do you view this whole thing?
Look, if you're a multiple offender, you should be off the streets. We need to make sure that this is a safe community. I firmly believe that we have a right to live in a safe community, and I don't think that that right is being upheld right now. And as long as the jail is in critical status where we cannot put offenders in there who need to be there, we're going to continue to be in this situation. I am fully for some criminal justice reform. I think that there are folks that we put in jail who do not need to be there. I think there are some, you know, minor drug offenses or minor, you know, infractions that we end up putting people in jail for. You know, it could be, you know, license suspended, things like that. That, no, we don't need to put them in a jail cell, because quite frankly, if you take somebody like that who might otherwise be living a good upstanding life and you put them in that situation, not only are you now putting them with some bad elements that could make them just worse when they come out, but you're putting potentially their job at risk and other things that could worsen their personal situations. So, you know, we should be smarter about those. But the folks with criminal histories, the folks that are committing like serious crimes, breaking into homes, committing violence, doing significant things like that, I think we absolutely have to have a strong, tough policy that says, hey, we are going to go, you know, as far as we can with you to get you off the streets, because we need a safe community here for our constituents, the families and employers and the tourists that come here and want to visit.
So if you envision a new jail or a jail facility or some criminal justice facility, what does it look like to you?
Well, actually, I have a kind of a bigger vision of what that could be. And this really wouldn't be a city council role. This is more really for the county commissioners. But I've shared this with them in the past. I really think there's an opportunity to consolidate the county campus. I think there's a lot of land around that county campus that is being used for surface parking. If we build a new facility, we can include integrated parking into that structure. We can reduce some of the footprint of the county, and then we can free up that space for private development to increase mixed use development around the area. We've got, you know, Kendall Yards to the south. You're going to have Larry Stone's Falls project over to the east. And I think this would make a great, you know, sort of fill in right in that very neighborhood there, just to improve, you know, the number of residential units that we have, to increase, you know, commercial retail space. There's just a lot of things that could happen there if given the right opportunity to the right folks.
So let's talk about housing and low income housing. Although there, Spokane is a housing shortage of all kinds.
Yes, we do.
What is the city council's role in trying to increase the stock of that housing, increase the amount of low income housing that's available?
Well, first of all, we should be changing our zoning rules and our density rules. There are certain parts of the city that I think need to densify much more. We need to do a much smarter job with that. I would love to see a bigger emphasis on small lot development. I think that would be huge. We can also eliminate some of the lot dimensional standards to increase, you know, how much space, you know, we can use on the properties. And we can also look at sort of a form-based type code that would help neighborhoods that are concerned about, you know, changes to realize that, you know, hey, new development that's going in is going to conform to what our neighborhood looks and feels like, and it's not going to change our neighborhood. And I think that's really important. There are a lot of neighborhoods that have very specific characteristics, and there are folks that are very concerned about that going away. And I don't want to threaten that. I don't think anybody does. But the bottom line is we still do need more residential units. We have an artificial constraint on land, you know, the urban growth boundary that keeps growth from going out. And so we're kind of stuck with what we have inside that boundary. And so I would change the rules to make it easier to build more residential. And again, this would apply to certain neighborhoods and within certain distances of our business districts. But we have to look much more strongly at that in order to increase the stock and the supply. And as we increase the stock, we're going to see the rents go down. We're going to see the costs fall. It's just basic supply and demand. And as we, you know, as we're keeping this constrained, we're just artificially increasing those costs, and it just makes things tougher on everybody.
So Ben Stuckert, the council president, yeah, to whom you referred, he talked about this too, especially the densification of the centers and corridors, yep, so to speak, where the transit is already aiming. Yeah. Are those the areas that you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are areas we can look at and we should be looking at. And in fact, I don't think, you know, I've been advocating for this myself, I think, for about 6 years now. And there really has been some very modest changes to the code in that time. You know, the council president has advocated for this, but again, you know, he really hasn't brought much of this to a vote. And so as a council member, I would like to see this come before us sooner rather than later, especially in light of the housing shortage that we're facing, the crisis. So I would make this a big priority just to increase the housing supply and the stock in our community right away.
So let's finish with this. We're in the last couple of minutes. So you've got seven folks in your race, yeah, which is an unusual sized race for a city of Spokane. So what sets you apart? Why should people vote for you over the other six?
Well, you know, I think I have been very involved in city issues going back, you know, quite a number of years now. I've been on a number of committees, a number of task forces with the city. I've been involved with comp plan updates and various work groups looking at infill development, things of that nature. So I think I've got the experience and the knowledge on a lot of these policy issues to sort of jump in and be ready to go on day one. And I'm, in addition to that, I really am looking forward to serving the community. I'm looking forward to serving, you know, all the areas of my district. You know, we've got one of the poorest neighborhoods in Hilliard in the entire state. And the idea of being able to go in there and try to figure out some new opportunities to improve outcomes for those folks just really excites me. I think there's some really cool opportunities that we could be pursuing. I would love to be the guy. I feel like I'm the right guy at the right time to help lead on a bunch of these issues, making our community safer, increasing housing, improving economic opportunity and transparency in the city. And so as well as our streets, you know, I just think that we're primed and ready to go. And I think I can jump in day one and start making things happen.
Michael Cathcart is one of the seven candidates for Spokane City Council in the Northeast District. We've now talked with five of those candidates. Tim Benn, Chris Brown, Doug Salter, and Nagmana Shirazi are the others. On Tuesday, candidate number six, Louis Lefevre. We also expect to talk soon with the seventh, Gerald Haynes. You can hear our full interviews with the candidates for Spokane City Office on the Spokane Public Radio website. We'll add one new candidate a day until we've featured all who have accepted our invitation. You can find the interviews by clicking on the Regional News tab and then clicking on Election 2019, or just go to the Inland Journal page. Or you can get the interviews by subscribing to the Inland Journal podcast in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.